You are listening to RudolfSteinerAudio.com. This is a reading of a cycle of lectures by Rudolf Steiner entitled The Inner Nature of Man and Our Life Between Death and Rebirth. This is Lecture 5, entitled The Senses and the Luciferic Temptation, given in Vienna on the 11th of April, 1914. In today's lecture, attention will be drawn to a number of definite results of occult investigation, which are eminently fitted to show us the true nature of the human being, but will also show us how complex the human being really is. Can we think otherwise when we reflect that the true image of man, the ideal of what human beings can be if they develop all the qualities and faculties within them, is fundamentally the religion of the gods, and that all the spirits of the different hierarchies, whose connection with the true nature of human beings we can come to know, work toward a common goal, with the object of building the human being out of the whole cosmos as the very purpose and meaning of this cosmos. The first thing to be said is that the sensory perceptions we have of the world around us, as they appear to the conscious mind, actually are only a small part of all the things that surge toward us. We are in the physical world, with our sense organs opened, contemplating the world with our brain and nerve-bound intellect, and trying to explain it to ourselves. Yet, only a small part of everything that surges toward us actually becomes an idea in our conscious mind. Light, colors, sounds, and so on are infinitely richer in content than we are able to realize. Modern physicists merely take a childlike view of the world when they say that colors, light, and so on are based on physical, substantial processes, such as the oscillations of atoms. It really is a childlike way of looking at things, for in reality, the following happens. Sensory perception must be investigated with the EYEI of clairvoyance, for it is only by thus observing the actual process of sensory perception that we can understand how human beings relate to the world around them, even if we do not go beyond the physical plane. Suppose something produces an effect on our eyes. We perceive light or color, and so become conscious of the sensation of light or color. The remarkable discovery made in the course of spiritual investigation is that something else also appears in the human being. When we perceive light or color, a kind of corpse of the light or the color appears in us at the same time as the sensation of the light or color itself. The IEYE causes us to have the inner experience of light or color. The light streams toward us and brings about the experience of light. But when we look more deeply, we discover that while we have the light in our consciousness, something which is present everywhere in our very being must die in order that we may experience the light. We cannot gain a perception or sensation of anything outside ourselves unless something of a corpse-producing process filters through the sensation that arises rather like a consequence of it. Someone who is doing spiritual investigation has to say, "I am looking at a person, and I know he is experiencing the color red. I also see that the red, which is in his conscious mind, lets something pour out over the whole person and fill his whole being. Insofar as it has entered into his skin and within the boundaries of his ether body, with something like the corpse of that color, and kills something in him." Just think of it. When we face the physical world and our sense organs are open, we are also always taking in the corpses of our sensory perceptions. These are like phantoms, but active phantoms. Whenever we perceive the outside world with the senses, something dies in us. This is a remarkable phenomenon. And the spiritual investigator must ask himself, what is really happening here? What is the cause of this remarkable phenomenon? We have to consider the true nature of the light that surges toward us. There are many things behind it, and the light itself is merely the advance guard. One thing which is not behind it is the wave motion, which is the product of the imagination of physicists. Behind the light and everything we perceive with the senses is, in the first place, something we can only understand if we use spiritual science and see the world with the aid of imaginations, creative images. If we were able to see and perceive everything which lives in the light or in sound or heat, we would perceive the creative imagination which lies behind the things that reach our consciousness. Within this, inspiration would reveal itself, and within inspiration, intuition. The things which reach the conscious mind may be regarded as the top layer, the froth on whatever it is that is winging toward us. In it lives what could become imagination, inspiration, and intuition in us if it were to come to consciousness. Sensory perception, therefore, gives us only a quarter of everything that surges toward us. The other three quarters enter into us without coming to awareness. When we are experiencing a color, the creative imagination, the inspiration, and the intuition belonging to it enter into us. It is as if they were pushing down into us through the surface of the color experience. If we take a closer look at these last three invaders, we find that if they were really to enter into the human organism in the way they want to, they would cause us to become spiritual whilst we are still in physical existence between birth and death here on earth. I spoke of this spiritualizing process yesterday, saying that it was a possible result of Lucifer's temptation. The effect of this imagination, inspiration, and intuition would be that we develop the urge to leave aside all the potential capacities we have which might help us to work toward the ideal human being of the far distant future. Instead, we would want to become spiritual here and now with everything we are. We would want to be spiritual at the level of perfection we have now reached through previous existence. So we would say to ourselves, it is too much of an effort to become truly human, for the path that will take us to the future is difficult. Let us ignore our human potential. We prefer to become angels, with all our present imperfections, for this will make us spiritual and take us straight into the world of the Spirit. It will mean, of course, that we shall be less perfect than we could be in the cosmos, seeing that we have the potential to be perfect, but we shall be spiritual, angelic beings. Here again you see the importance of what is called, quote, the threshold to the world of the Spirit, close quote, and the Spirit who is known as, quote, the guardian of the threshold, close quote. The guardian stands at the point of which I have just spoken. He allows only the sensory experience to come to our conscious awareness, keeping out the imagination, inspiration, and intuition that would immediately make us want to become spiritual, just as we are, foregoing all further life as human beings. Imagination, inspiration, and intuition have to be veiled from us, the door of our consciousness closed against them. They do, however, enter into our essential nature, and as they do so, without being illuminated in the light of the conscious mind, and we are obliged to let them descend into the dark depths of the subconscious, the spiritual entities of whom Lucifer is the opponent enter into us from the other side. And battle then commences in us between Lucifer, who sends his imagination, inspiration, and intuition into us, and these other spirits. We would behold this battle taking place whenever we perceive anything with the senses, but it is hidden from us though not from clairvoyant vision, by the threshold that has been set. You will now realize that a great deal is actually going on in the inner depths of the human being. The outcome of the battle taking place in us is a kind of corpse, a partial corpse. It represents something in us which must become entirely material, like a mineral deposit, so that we shall not be able to make it spiritual. If the battle between Lucifer and his opponents did not produce this corpse, we would have the outcome of imagination, inspiration, and intuition in us, and would rise directly into the world of the spirit. The corpse weighs us down. It is the means by which the good spirits, Lucifer's opponents, keep us in the physical world for the time being. They keep a veil over the otherwise inevitable urge to be spiritual, so that we may work toward the ideal human being, seeking to develop all our potential qualities. It is because we have this deposit, this corpse-like phantom developing in us, each time we perceive anything with the senses, that we kill the urge to be spiritual, which is constantly arising in us. Something arises in us when the deposit is formed. It is something I have mentioned before, and it is important that we understand it in all its implications. When you look into a mirror, you have a pane of glass before you, and you would see right through this if it had not been silvered. The silvering makes the glass reflect anything in front of the mirror. If you were to come face to face with your physical body in such a way that you experienced not only the sensory perceptions entering into it, but also the imaginations, inspirations, and intuitions, you would be looking right through your physical body. The feeling would be such that you would say something like this to yourself, quote, "I do not want to have anything to do with this physical body. I shall ignore it and rise into the spiritual world just as I am." Close quote. Yes, your physical body would present itself to you just like a pane of glass which has not been silvered. As it is, the physical body has the corpse within it, just like the silvered backing of a mirror. Everything is reflected in it, but only to the extent to which we have perceived it with the senses. The corpse, which is always in us, is like a mirror coating given to the whole body. And because of this, we see ourselves in the physical world. It is this which makes us individual physical entities in the physical world. Here you see the complexity of a human being. Let us take the other case, where we do not merely perceive, but also think. When we think, it is not a matter of sensory perceptions. Thoughts may be triggered by sensory perceptions, but thinking as such is a more inward process. When we are thinking, we do not make an impression on the physical body, but certainly on the ether body. Yet, here too, not everything contained in our thoughts enters into us. If it did, we would feel living elemental beings pulsing in us every time we think. We would feel as if we were teeming with life itself. I once said in Munich that if we were to experience thoughts as they really are, we would feel ourselves to be in a maze of activity, rather like an ant heap. Everything would be alive. We are not aware of this life in our human thinking, because, again, it is only the froth that reaches the conscious mind, creating shadowy images of the thoughts that come up in our thinking. On the other hand, the vital powers that are alive in our thoughts go down into the ether body. We do not consciously perceive the elemental spirits flitting through us. All we perceive is an extract of these, something like the shadow they cast. The other part, the life of the thoughts, enters into us. The result is that a battle again arises, this time between the progressive spirits and Ahriman, or the Ahrimanic spirits. The outcome of the battle is that the thoughts do not act in us as they would if they were living entities. If they did, we would feel ourselves to be inside the life of the thought entities as they move hither and thither. Instead, our etheric body, which otherwise would be completely transparent, is made non-transparent, as it were. I would say something like a smoky quartz or cairngorm, with dark layers in it. Quartz is, as such, is quite transparent and pure. This is how darkness of spirit fills our etheric body, and this is our store of memories. The store of memories arises when the above-mentioned processes cause thoughts to be reflected, as it were, in the etheric body, but now in time, going as far back as our memory extends in physical life. Our memory, therefore, holds thoughts which are reflected out of time. Deep down in the ether body, the good divine spirits who are opposed by Ahriman are at work, skillfully combining the powers which will give new life to the elements which died in the physical body as the result of the above-mentioned processes. A corpse has to be produced in the physical body to prevent us from following the urge to become spiritual, even though we are far from perfect. At the same time, the ether body provides the power to rekindle life. The elements which were killed can thus be given new life and form in future. We now see for the first time the significance of before and after. If we were to let the imaginations, inspirations, and intuitions which enter into us take full effect right here and now, we would be following Lucifer and would become spiritual. But because they are cast into the future and do not take effect now, but are preserved as seeds for the future, they regain their true nature. At the present time, we should misuse these elements. In future, however, when we have gone through the gate of death, we shall use them to shape a new life for ourselves out of the world of the spirit. Used in the physical world, these powers would induce us to become spiritual with all our imperfections. After death, they induce us to return to life on earth again. Things, therefore, work in opposite ways in the different worlds. Having considered our thinking, let us now consider our feeling. Again, any feeling response in us falls short of what it could be according to its full inner potential. Feelings of which we are conscious are mere shadow images of what really lives in us, for our feelings too have spiritual reality. Remembering what I said in the first lecture, you will realize that the spiritual entities who are behind the whole of our planetary system live in our feelings. It is merely that we have no conscious awareness of this. Our feelings, as we know them, are within our range of consciousness. The rest stays outside. What does this really mean? It is extremely difficult to put these things in the words of our everyday language. We have said that sensory perception and thinking give rise to a killing process in us, though in the case of thinking there is also the counter effect in which something is kindled that will be alive in the future. We also have to say that every feeling we have or develop does not fully come to birth or into existence. If everything we have in us when we feel were to emerge, the spirit which lives in the feeling would take hold of us and fill us with energy in quite a different way. However, the element which lies behind the feeling, making it into a living entity whose life is fed out of the whole planetary system, does not emerge as such. The feeling, too, emerges only as a shadow of its real self. The result is that whenever we enter into the world of our feelings, with a deep sense of our humanity, we actually have a sense of dissatisfaction with every one of our feelings. We feel every one of them could be more intense and stand out more clearly. It is particularly with regard to our feelings that our hearts must really tell us. Our feelings could tell us much more than they actually do They are hiding part of our inner life, something deep down in the soul that is only half born. The same holds true, but even more so, with regard to the will, everything we may want or desire. Behind the will is the spiritual ground of all being, whose true dwelling place is the sun. In the will lives not only the principle which lives in the planets, but the principle which lives in the whole of the sun. It is hidden, however. Our will is even less fully born than our feeling. We would be filled with it in a very different way indeed if everything it contains really came to conscious awareness. Only the uppermost froth, utterly superficial, comes to expression. The rest is hidden from us. The question is, why is a whole world of things hidden from us in feeling and will? The reason is that we would not be able to bear it if we were to see them from the physical plane. They would present themselves as something we would want to ward off, turning away from them. The element which remains unborn in our feeling and in the will is our evolving karma. Let us say we feel hostile toward someone, to give a concrete example. The hostile feeling which comes to conscious awareness is merely the ripple on the surface. Powers which extend over the whole of the planetary system are contained in this feeling. Yet it is precisely the hidden part which says to us, with your hostile feeling, you are letting something imperfect take root in you. This must be balanced out. If the element which lives deep down in us were to emerge, we would immediately have before us the imagination of the karmic element which must balance out the hostile feeling. And because we would be judging this from the standpoint of the physical plane, we would join forces with Lucifer and Ahriman to avoid the balancing out process. It is, however, hidden from us when we are on the physical plane. The guardian of the threshold hides it from us for the simple reason that on the physical plane we cannot judge the part of our feelings and will impulses which remains unborn. We can do so only when we are in the world of the spirit between death and a new birth. Then we actually desire things we would otherwise never desire, and we want to see anything by way of a hostile attitude balanced out. For when we are there, we take a genuine interest in the religion of the gods, which is the ideal of humanity, which wants to make us into perfect human beings. This tells us that anything caused by hostile feelings must be balanced out by applying the opposite. The unborn part of our feelings and will impulses must be preserved and should only emerge at a future time, after death. I have now presented to you four elements from the inner core of the human soul. The unborn part of our feelings lives in the astral body, the unborn part of our will in the ego. When we perceive the world around us, we have a kind of physical phantom corpse in us, which is really the mirror backing for the physical body. And we have an element of darkness in the ether body. Our astral body holds something which does not come to birth between birth and death. And part of the will also does not come to birth. These four elements in us have to be kept for the time between death and a new birth. Yet they live in us as the core of our soul, just as surely as the seed for the next year lives in a plant. You can see that we are not only able to speak of a core of the soul as such, but also to understand its four elements. If an inner feeling gives rise to disquiet, let us say, and if we are not really satisfied with our life, this is due to pressure that the unborn part of our feelings exert on the part which has come to consciousness. How can we avoid this pressure? The pressure, you see, is a constant threat to human beings, for it creates disharmony in us with regard to our feelings and our will, which, in the sense of the first lecture of 9th April, are the inner life. if there was genuine harmony between the parts of feeling and will that have been born and the parts that remain behind the threshold of consciousness, we would be happy and contented people in this physical world. This is where the reason for all inner dissatisfaction is to be found. For all our inner dissatisfaction is due to pressure from the subconscious parts of our feeling and will. I have to add that the essential nature of human beings has changed in this respect in the course of evolution. Today, things are exactly the way I have described, but they have not always been like this. In earlier times of human evolution, let us say during the ancient Persian, Egyptian, and Indian epochs, sensory perceptions were received in exactly the same way, but the imaginations, inspirations, and intuitions they contained were not quite as ineffective as they are today. They did not kill the inner physical life as completely as they do now, nor did they provide such dense mineral deposits. The reason was that when sensory perceptions streamed in from the outside, something would spring up from the other side, under certain conditions, out of feeling and will. If we were to go back to the earlier times of the ancient Egyptian or Babylonian civilizations, for example, and observe the human beings who lived then, we would find their sensory perceptions to have been of quite a different nature. They came face to face with the physical world, just as we do, but their bodies were still organized in such a way that the imaginations hidden in their sensory perceptions were not as deadly in their effect, but came to people with some degree of life in them. Being alive, they called forth the counter-image of the element which today is completely hidden in the ego and astral body. The spiritual entities of the sun principle and the planetary system pushed against the sensory perceptions from inside, and, as it were, mirrored the element brought to life through the imagination. For the people of the ancient Egyptian and Babylonian civilizations, there were times when they looked at the physical world around them and took in not only the physical perceptions we gain today, but perceptions which came alive. They would know there was something behind their sensory perceptions which came into its own in imaginations. They were therefore not so foolish as to suppose, the way our modern physicists do, that there were oscillating atoms behind the things they perceived. They knew there was life behind them. And so, images of the starry heavens, full of life, and even images of the sun would arise in them, radiating outward in response. This was particularly so during the ancient Persian civilization, when something of the inner spiritual power of the sun would shine out in them when they perceived the outside world, and this was Ahura Mazda. Going back to still earlier times, we find this meeting between the inner and the outer to have been even stronger. Today it can no longer be so, but there can be a substitute, and here we come to a point where the very nature of the matter can help us to gain a true understanding of the task we have been set in the context of the anthroposophical view of life. A substitute must be created. We relate to the world around us through our sensory perceptions. We think about these. But the part of them which is not accessible to us has a deadening effect and fills us with darkness. We can, however, bring life into this through anthroposophy. It is precisely by this means that we develop the kind of science which is presented in the evolution of Saturn, Sun, and Moon evolution in my title, Occult Science. Every human being has knowledge of this process of evolution, but only deep down, at a subconscious level. If they were able to see this without the necessary preparation, people would not want to be human beings on Earth. They would feel that the earth was of no concern of theirs and would wish that human evolution had come to an end with the moon evolution. Everything we are able to discover through the science of the spirit, throws light on the hidden aspects of past evolution when it enters into us. For when we are able to see through the veil of our sensory perceptions, we find that essentially the imaginations, inspirations, and intuitions, which are alive in those perceptions but do not enter into us, relate to the past that lies behind us. It is not quite the same in regard to what lives in our feeling and in our will. People may say, and many people feel compelled to do so today, quote, "Why should I care about anything those cranks are thinking up concerning a supersensible world? I refuse to accept such ideas." Close quote. People who say this have no notion of why religions have developed in world evolution. One thing all religious ideas have in common is that they relate to things which cannot be perceived with the senses. Human beings need religious ideas to meet an inner need, for ideas derived from anything we are able to perceive with the senses will never give our feeling and will the impulse which will give us impetus, power over death. The ideas we have gained through sensory perceptions and the brain-bound intellect will be of no use to us when it comes to giving effective power to the part of our feeling and will which does not come to birth during life. The impulse and impetus we shall need after death can only come from ideas that do not relate to outward reality, but make us turn to higher things and look up to a world of the spirit. Religious thinking is to think of things which cannot be active in us now, but will be active after death. When we take in religious ideas, these are not merely ideas based on knowledge, but something which will be active after death, which means that now, when we are in a physical body, people who refuse to give any thought to active principles of this kind will laugh about them, and being materialists, reject them. But if they do not let ideas of the supersensible enter into them, their power to bring the unborn elements in their feeling and will to development will be crippled. This is why I have to stress over and over again that clairvoyant consciousness throws light on the past. This is recognized again today, as are the imaginations, inspirations, and intuitions, which are veiled by the world perceptible to the senses and have an influence on that world. In earlier times, this was given to human beings as religious faith and belief, in order that they might not lose all impetus for the time after death, and might have something in the inner core of the soul that would keep them alive once they had laid aside their physical bodies. Now the time has come when people should develop ideas on the worlds of the spirit, which is possible thanks to the science of the spirit. It therefore cannot be stressed often enough that whilst one needs to be a spiritual investigator to discover these things in the world of the spirit, we all have a secret language deep down in our souls, which enables us to understand what spiritual investigators have discovered and make known to us. It is sheer prejudice of the intellect and the senses which makes people consider the ideas relating to the supersensible world, which are presented by spiritual investigators, to be nonsense and figments of the imagination. If we accept these ideas, they will give impetus to the inner core of our being, so that in all future ages it will find its way in the cosmos. Investigation of the contents of the spiritual world is only possible if one has achieved esoteric development. But to have knowledge of these elements, to work through them inwardly in consciousness, and have ideas and concepts of them, to make them our own and know for certain that the soul exists in the world of the spirit, this is something human beings will need more and more as essential nourishment for soul and spirit. We see, therefore, how the mission of our anthroposophical movement can be understood out of the reality of the situation. In earlier times, human understanding was given life from above, with the contents for this coming from below. The ancients, therefore, had immediate awareness, but this gradually became dull and obscured. If this had not happened, human beings would not have achieved full ego consciousness, for they can only do so by developing the phantom corpse in the living physical body of which I have spoken. Being transparent, the physical body must, as it were, be coated like a mirror. And only when the coating is complete are we able to say, I am an I, capital. The complete coating only developed slowly and gradually in the course of human evolution. It had reached completion at the time of the mystery of Golgotha. Before then, elements from above and below still came together in the human being. Both were completely forced out when the mirror was fully coated, and human beings perceived everything as mirrored by the physical body. What did actually happen at that time? Let us take a close look at this. Picture to yourselves the conscious awareness of people who lived before the mystery of Golgotha. The life-giving quality of imaginations came from outside, and images of the world of the spirit outside the human being arose from inside. We know people were able to let such images rise up in those times when in a reduced state of consciousness. Initiates who at that time were able to see the living encounter in the soul between life-filled imaginations coming from outside and visions arising from inside would not say, quote, human beings are perceiving these things on their own, close quote, but rather, quote, Yahweh or Jehovah, this would be in the case of the ancient Jews, is inside the human being and looking at his world. The God is thinking in the human being. Close quote. Today, in our present cycle of evolution, we say, quote, I think. Close quote. Those who knew of these things in earlier times would say, quote, the gods think in us, close quote, when visions came from the world of the spirit. Those who recognized the one God who represented the unity of the divine world would say, quote, Yahweh thinks in human beings, who are the stage for the divine thoughts, close quote. People knew themselves to be filled with these thoughts and therefore said, the gods think in me. Human evolution demanded, however, that this became increasingly less possible. We might say that increasing darkness met the visions and thoughts of the gods in the human being as the phantom corpse gained in strength and importance. A time was approaching when thoughts would no longer come from human beings to meet the gods. The divine entity, who may be said to have been thinking through the human being, felt that its consciousness, which consisted in its thoughts, was growing dull and fading away. A longing then arose in this divine entity to awaken to life a new form of consciousness. Human beings merely come to a different form of consciousness. The gods create something essential to themselves when they create a new consciousness. Christ was the essential principle to arise for the divine entity of which we are speaking when it felt its consciousness fading. Christ is the child of the divine entity, and Christ restores consciousness of divine nature in human life and activity. And so the essence of Christ had to become part of essential human nature. We have to realize that when we perceive the world through the senses, we continually let a process of dying flow into us. When we think about this world, we let darkness and obscurity flow in. And with our feelings and will impulses, we let elements flow into us which are unborn. We let our dying and those unborn elements in us, which we will only be able to use when we are dead, flow into the subconscious depths of our being. It would all be feeble and crippled if we were unable to let it flow into the Christ essence, which the divine entity brought to birth for itself as the essence of a new consciousness. Awareness of this can come when, in the light of spiritual science, we perceive the true meaning of the whole of evolution, which is, we send the elements of dying which are in us down into subconscious depths, where they are received by Christ, who lives as he comes to meet us. Christ comes to live in the element which dies in us, grows dark, and remains unborn. We let the things that must die go down into death in us, so that we may come close to the true ideal human being with everything we are. But we pour the dying, which is in us, into the Christ essence, which has been part of human evolution since the founding of Christianity. We know that the elements of feeling and will, which remain unborn in us, are received into the Christ substance, into which they sink down after death. There, within us, Christ has been living since he went through the mystery of Golgotha. We let the dying that comes with all sensory perception go down into Christ. We let the darkening of our thinking go down into Christ, sending our darkened thoughts into the light of the Christ Son. And when we go through the gate of death, our unborn feeling and will impulses enter into the Christ substance. When we gain real understanding of evolution, we say, we die into Christ, in Christo morimur. The end of Lecture 5.